Word, and it's in every single song and every single concert that Blind Boys of Alabama does all over the world. You can do it too in your family, your living room couch, the music of your front porch. You can do the same thing. My name is Michael Jonathan. I'm a folk singer. I am a song farmer, and we'll see you next week on the Woods Song. Good night.
You've been listening to Woods Songs broadcast number 9.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
Folks, breakfast is a lie, a vile conspiracy, a treacherous butter and jam covered scam foisted upon us by a couple generations of big American agricultural corporations who are always looking for any excuse to pour toxic fats and processed carbohydrates into our very bones. Orange juice, pancakes, and cinnamon toast is not a meal so healthy and so complete you should feel free to throw in a bowl of Fruit Loops. And no, it's not the most important meal of the day. That was made up. It's not traditional wisdom. Nobody ate breakfast 200 years ago. You really shouldn't eat much in the morning. Certainly not sugar and carbs. We aren't like cars. We don't fill up the tank and then burn it during the day. In fact, you could go weeks without eating and probably should. Fasting is physically good for you, and it'll show you that most of your ideas about meals are emotional rather than physiological. And what's with the special menus? Everywhere I go, there's a special extra menu for breakfast. Oh, I'm sorry, we can't make that for you. We're doing breakfast right now. What? Why? What's with the weird universally privileged status of this one made-up meal? Why can't I get my steak and soup at 7 a.m.? Listen, folks, dark and or foolish forces have kept us in the dark and or the foolishness of accepting the special status of breakfast for far too long. And I should know. Big agribusiness paid me to say this. Hi, I'm Layman Pascal, and today's show is about how breakfast is a lie, but UFOs are real. You're listening to the Cinematic Asylum on CILU 102.7 FM in the Shadow of the Sleeping Giant, and here's some songs about UFOs. We'll be right back.
strange flashing red light.
Yeah,
it's yellow.
Weird.
It's coming his way.
It looks like an eye winking at you. It looks like a pupil of an eye looking at you, winking.
Strange.
Fighters with Down in the Park from the original X-Files movie soundtrack, followed by Sir with Fire in the Sky. You know, I always kind of liked the X-Files because I always kind of wanted to be something like a transrational supernatural detective when I was a boy. Maybe a cryptozoologist, maybe a wizard mercenary, maybe Fox Mulder or Dirk Gently or Dale Cooper or Charles Fort or Clive Barker's Harry DeMore. An implacable, unpredictable, and idiosyncratic investigator of uncanny phenomenon, ready to debunk, rebunk, or sidebunk anything wondrous or anomalous. And sidebunking, I'm told by the voices in my head, is when a reported anomalous phenomenon turns out not to be what the witnesses thought it was, but actually something much stranger and far worse. Bunk, for example, is the idea that 9/11 was an inside job. Debunk is when the mainstream media and so-called experts want you to forget it was an inside job and believe the conventional tale that it was Saudi jihadists working with Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. They try to debunk the bunk. Rebunk is when you first kind of side with the debunk because the bunk folks are so erratic and overly impressed by just about anything they think opposes the mainstream that they'll believe damn near anything, but then you finally come across that one video or expert that makes you think, you know, maybe something really more covert than I thought was going on here. False flag attacks, after all, do happen. History is full of them. There could be something to this bunk after all. That's rebunk. But sidebunking is when you find out the truly strange thing, the interdimensional bodies, the Atlantean vortex, the pseudo-sentient gravitational ripple, the god Poseidon or whatnot, that was so strange and dangerous and dange and strangerous that making it seem like we were attacked by terrorists on home soil or making it seem like we staged it ourselves are both stories far easier, nicer, and more believable than the truly weird stuff that's actually going on. Sidebunk! And the one writer on The X-Files who focused on sidebunk was Darren Morgan. He was the brother of one of the producers, Glenn Morgan. He got a few minor acting gigs on the show, but then he started writing his own scripts. Weird scripts. Funny scripts. Mind-bending scripts. On The X-Files, if you remember, there were basically two kinds of episodes. The Ongoing Conspiracy and The Monster of the Week. It was either a Sasquatch or The Smoking Man. But once in a while, there were these other episodes. The one with the cynically psychic taxi driver who predicts Mulder will die of autoerotic asphyxiation. The one where a lizard gets bit by a human and then turns into a human on the full moon. He's not a were-lizard, he's a were-human. The one where the government is secretly erasing our past into the mandala effect, which is part of a post-truth reality. These are all Darren Morgan episodes. And the first episode I ever saw by Darren Morgan was called Jose Chung's From Outer Space. Now, I'm told Jose Chung is the name the writers on that show gave to their fantasy of the author of all the unsigned scripts they received. Sometimes people would send in strange screenplays for X-Files episodes and there was no author's name, so they would attribute that writing to this made-up guy, Jose Chung. But in this episode, Darren Morgan makes Jose into a character within his own script. Jose Chung there is a charming, wry, cynical author trying to make some quick cash writing a book about a UFO incident. So he interviews Skeptical Scully about what happened in this small town where two kids ostensibly got abducted. But Skeptical Scully remembers it a little differently from the people Jose interviewed in that same town. And they all remember it differently from Mulder, or at least half differently. And all their recollections sort of overlap oddly and stray into truly bizarre territory that leaves you feeling like you've strayed to the edge of all interpretations of reality, and then realized you were too close to the edge and then tried hastily to back up a little, and because of that, you lost your footing and went whoosh, right over. I remember seeing that episode as a kid and thinking, finally, a realistic depiction of UFOs. Something that depicts the true weirdness of reality-bending events and unearthly beings. How I got that impression is anyone's guess. To quote the psychedelic time philosopher Terence McKenna, if so-called contactees really told all the improbable and fantastical details of their own alien encounters, they'd sound like wackos. So normally people automatically edit the true weirdness of their experiences. They dull it down to something that sounds a little more realistic, like abduction by spacemen. But the annals of UFO history, and I think that's how that's pronounced, are deeply beaded with strange tales that don't seem to fit quite rightly into the categories of hoax, alien, or hallucination. Imagine this. Imagine a sober farmer, a reliable farmer, who saunters out into his summer sun-baked yard one evening and is startled to find there a large silver object with elusive creatures descending from it. Well, he's never seen anything like this. And the weird thing is, he doesn't react to it like it's weird. He just stands there and talks to them. They ask him what time it is. He checks his watch. He tells them it's 5:30. They call him a liar and offer him some pancakes. He asks about the pancakes, but their reply seems to be gibberish, and then they leave. The next day, all the grass in that area is oddly wilted and has signs of genetic mutation as if it had received high doses of radiation, and a weird-shaped lump of metal is found nearby the circle, but the local laboratory cannot identify it. It might be, they say, from a meteorite. Now, what happened? That's a paraphrase of a famous actual UFO encounter from the early 20th century. Does hoax or hallucination or even extraterrestrial space traveler really make sense of what that guy experienced? I don't think so. That's not to say there aren't space travelers and secret government projects and hallucinations and hoaxes. But altogether, they don't strike me as being the whole story. Something more might needy in our thinking. And it's that more that interests me, and apparently also interests Darren Morgan. Because this episode of The X-Files, his episode of The X-Files, Jose Chung's from Outer Space, it has witnesses changing their stories, it has fake UFOs piloted by Air Force pilots trying to disguise their secret research technology as UFOs, but those pilots of the fake UFOs run into highly implausible entities they can't make any sense of, some of them even weirder than UFOs. But they also can't trust their own memories of anything, because they've seen people's memories being brainwashed at their own secret bases. And the two kids who get picked up by two types of competing UFOs undergo hypnosis, revealing they've repressed the trauma of being on a spaceship. But when the next hypnotist re-hypnotizes them, he discovers that they only thought that because they were hypnotized by government operatives whose intention was to lead people away from the actual UFOs by making them believe generic and cartoonish UFO stories. Plus, these kids keep changing their stories for personal reasons. Alex Trebek and Jesse Ventura play themselves in this episode as men in black who visit witnesses and confuse them with surrealistic behavior and extremely unlikely and even obviously false cover stories. One witness writes everything down that he saw in screenplay format, and he seems to believe that the aliens took him to the center of the earth with a lava man, and then he flees town to start a cult. At the end of the episode, Mulder begs Jose Chung not to write the book because he thinks the real events are so confusing and beyond the scope of our understanding that their existential ridiculousness will discredit the burgeoning field of UFO studies. And for me, for some reason, all that stuff sounds realistic.
Song is that remembered at random serpentine through fatty coils emerging. Some other thought it's thinking. This light shines above the houses on the ground. This illumination visited upon the whole land. Unmarked helicopters hovering. The Lord is coming soon. Here comes the supercopter, here comes the noise it makes. The demon was an idea, the demon is awake. Well, scratch mark left across the surface of your mind. This hour now upon us, the hour has now arrived. Unmarked helicopters hovering. The Lord is coming soon. Unmarked helicopters hovering. They said it was a weather balloon. I know the whole shebang. I know the names of men they had to hang. I let her out the trunk. I heard what she said of them. They come to drag her through the double M. She goes black, 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 and blacker. She goes black, 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 black.
That was the Neo Geo dubstep remix of the X-Files theme, followed by Unmarked Helicopters by Soul Coughing from, again, the original X-Files movie soundtrack. I'm Layman Pascal. This is CILU 102.7 FM and our very special Breakfast is Alive at UFOs Are Real episode. What is going on with UFOs or unidentified aerial phenomenon or anomalous atmospheric encounters? Well, something or somethings is going on. Despite the closure of Project Blue Book decades ago, the Pentagon has officially confirmed there is an annual ongoing $22 million government program to collect and analyze, quote, anomalous aerospace threats. And the U.S. Navy has recently released some odd footage and is officially, quote, updating and formalizing the process by which reports of such strange suspected incursions can be made to cognizant authorities, unquote. So what are we dealing with here? Hoax, hallucination, secret projects, space aliens? Well, it seems to me there are two main problems with the hoaxes hypothesis. First of all, the amount of motivation and effort and expertise regularly applied all over the world would have to be extraordinary. With Bigfoot, you might be able to explain the evidence away by a few zealous hoaxers, but the military of the world doesn't pay millions of dollars a year to try to figure out what the heck Bigfoot sightings are. The sheer scale of anomalous atmospheric encounters is highly suggestive. The other problem for hoax hypothesizers, though, of course, is for lots of people anyway, they've had the experience themselves. A hoax is a very plausible idea when you hear about it happening to others, but when it happens to you, the tables turn. You didn't hoax yourself, did you? Or did you? If you did, maybe it's hallucination. Maybe it's some species of free-range mystical experience, even. Maybe so. It's hard to explain with the hallucination and mystical experience hypothesis the fact that things are sometimes caught on videotape or seen by multiple witnesses, or even strange bits of physical evidence when they crop up. So maybe we're dealing then with actual extraterrestrials with highly developed alien technology from distant space planets. Well, that has three major drawbacks as an explanation. Firstly, it's hard to imagine what motive they could have for approaching our civilization in such an intermittent and perplexing manner. Why don't they just land on the lawn of the European Parliament and either kill us all or hand us the keys to Galactic City Council? We can, of course, speculate that those are very human motives and not really very alien, but if they're enough like us to build spaceships and go exploring, then maybe they have motives we can understand. But if you sift through the bulk of the records of UFO encounters, they don't seem to be an expression of a very straightforward political or pragmatic motive by anything like what we would call a technological civilization. The second problem, as usual, is Albert Einstein, that jerk. As far as we can tell, and we could be totally wrong if some of our basic assumptions about the physical reality are incorrect, but we've had a long series of great successes using Einstein's ideas, and it appears plausible, therefore, that he was correct about the existence of a cosmic speed limit. The speed of light and the speed of gravity. The maximum rate at which sequential information changes can proliferate through a physical medium before its relative experience of time and mass go to infinity and cancel out. So this speed limit suggests it would be pretty much impossible to go back and forth easily between the stars. You could freeze yourself or send robots, but it would take damn near forever. And if they traveled fast, then the time dilation would mean that hundreds or thousands or millions of years might go back and forth for everyone else as you make that journey. It's possible, but not very practical for zipping around and exploring other star systems. Perhaps then indeed there are some technological information, technological innovations, technological things we haven't discovered yet. After all, we did break the sound barrier back in the day when reputable folks said it was impossible. But it's not quite the same with the light barrier. Those folks only said it was impossible. They didn't have a well-tested mathematical and physical principle that indicated it was literally impossible, not just unknown and difficult. That said, we might not really know what space is. Maybe quantized space-time is a situation in which the infinities of relativity theory drop out and physical proximity turns out to be a side effect of entanglement. And if two places or particles are more entangled, then they're literally closer together in space regardless of whether or not you observe them as seeming to be very far apart. Maybe we need a new idea about relativistic locality. Okay, not out of the question, but not so true we can count on it at the moment as explaining anything. That was the second problem. The third problem is, why haven't any of these alien technology users sent us any decipherable messages? Why don't we see traces of predictable civilized patterns of radiation and information coming from our deep space scans? Are they hiding? Did they die out long ago? Do they use energy in a way that mimics randomness so we can't interpret it as meaningful? Maybe, maybe. But if they're enough like us to build and use spaceships, it's probable they are enough like us to send messages, try to make contact, use electromagnetic energy signatures, right? Right? Okay, but what if they aren't coming from other planets? Then what? Then maybe it's secret government projects? Don't we know for a fact that well-funded governments have always sponsored experimental advances in military technology? The American Military Intelligence Department created the internet, the atomic bomb, stealth aircraft, and energy beams that derange brains. They don't leave any range in those brains. They get totally deranged. So who knows what people like that are doing in the upper atmosphere of our planet, or doing with Nikola Tesla's old notebooks, or anti-gravity research, or alternate forms of propulsion and new materials with new properties modified at the quantum level? Whatever you know about the most advanced technology we have on this planet, they probably have things more advanced than that, even though they probably don't have things as advanced as anything you can imagine. So I take it for granted that American, Russian, Chinese, and probably the Saudis are testing experimental forms of aircraft, spacecraft, energy systems, and psyops, that's using chemicals, radiation, and neuropsychological manipulation to distort our brains. Granted, that's all definitely happening. We don't exactly know how much of it or in what particular forms, but it is going on. However, we also know it's probably not happening everywhere all the time, and there are probably physical limits to what that technology can do, and psychological limits to what those scientists can figure out. And frankly, a lot of so-called disclosed information from people apparently in the know about high-up military and corporate intelligence projects seems to still report a fair number of unknown, anomalous, magical, or otherwise deeply weird encounters that they don't seem to think are explained by their own secret projects and tech. Things that move at speeds and in directions that defy everything we know about inertia, and everything that actual conspiracists believe about their actual high-tech psyops projects. Did I say conspiracists? It doesn't seem like secret military projects can be the whole story. Maybe they're most of the story, but not the whole story, because the whole story seems to me to defy the logic of military projects, to boggle the minds of secret agents, to confuse the deep state, and to perform in ways that go beyond ultra-high-tech into realms that might better be described as magic or mystical. So what if it's something like that? What if it's higher dimensional beings so far beyond us they seem like magical things? Well, okay, when I was a kid, I read a lot of Jacques Vallée, the French information scientist who was a consultant for Spielberg's movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. He looked for patterns in UFO encounter experiences and quickly discovered they were highly similar to patterns of contact with elves, devils, and angels in previous centuries. In fact, the only thing that seemed to change over the years was that people perceived the experience in accordance with whatever level of technology happened to be the leading edge at the time. Solar chariots, sky boats, magic ladders, airships, spaceships, the camouflage changed, sure, but the experiences were roughly the same. So what are these things? Well, he started to think they were interdimensional or higher dimensional. In the olden days, even before the fiasco of string theory, there were notions of higher dimensions. The fourth dimension is time. The fifth dimension is eternity. The sixth dimension is your own willpower put through a meat grinder and used by Jackson Pollock to decorate a neon carousel at the bottom of the ocean, and so on and so forth. Well, and if you just put your normal 3D hand down on the 2D flat surface of a swimming pool, the beings who live on that pure flat surface will see five different circles suddenly appearing from nowhere, getting larger, then receding and disappearing into somewhere that seems like nowhere. And how about that? Couldn't that explain everything? Well, it's a fun idea, but I always caution people about pretending they can think what they actually can't think. If something is really just 2D and it has no depth at all, then maybe it doesn't actually exist outside of algebraic syntax. Is there really such a thing as a perfectly flat surface? And if you try to imagine what these probably non-existent beings would see from their so-called 2D perspective, and then you try to use the impressions you gain from that to try to organize for yourself the superstructure of the cosmos you actually live in, then you're on pretty shaky ground, I think. Where do they come from? Oh, they come from an impossible space outside of all space? Well, that's not much of an explanation. It might be an invitation to an excellent meditation practice, but it's almost guaranteed to tell us nothing about the external universe. Almost. Now, maybe the right answer is all of the above. What would the world look like if there were some extraterrestrial civilizations, some secret technologies, some hoaxes, some hallucinations, and some hyperdimensional effects? What do you think? Would that resemble the world we live in? The world in which, as I said earlier, we are spoon-fed a lie about breakfast.
CILU is sponsored in part by the students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
The Foundry at 242 Red River Road, open 11 a.m. to 2 a.m. Monday to Saturday, featuring folk and Mondays, karaoke Tuesdays, trivia Wednesdays, open stage Thursdays, and live music weekends. Find out more at thefoundrypub.com. The Thunder Bay Symphony Orchestra. Log on to tbso.ca or call 626-TBSO for details on the 2019-2020 season and how to get tickets. The Lakehead University Student Union, promoting action, advocacy, and service by bringing you student centers. Learn more by visiting their office in the tunnels of the student center or by logging on to lusu.ca.
I did five cruises to the Gulf. I started right after Desert Storm. I had an entire squadron. I had 12 airplanes and 330 people. This is mine. This is what we typically flew at night. You can see these little brackets here. November 14th, 2004. It's a clear blue sky. There's no wind. And you see this tic-tac. It's just this white object that's randomly moving around. It makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up a little bit. I remember telling my backseater, I said, dude, I don't know about you, but I'm a little weirded out. It's not a helicopter. It doesn't have rotor wash. There's no propulsion. There's no wings. It rapidly accelerates and disappears, like, poof, gone. Weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Thank you.
cover of One is the Loneliest Number by Filter from the original X-Files movie soundtrack. I'm Layman Pascal, this is CILU 102.7 FM, and you're listening to our special Breakfast is a Lie, but UFOs are Real edition. Let me quote Wikipedia. While breakfast is commonly referred to as the most important meal of the day, some epidemiological research indicates that having a breakfast high in rapidly available carbohydrates increases the risk of metabolic syndrome. Metabolic syndrome is a clustering of at least five or three of the five following medical conditions: central obesity, high blood pressure, high blood sugar, high serum triglycerides, and low serum high-density lipoprotein. Metabolic syndrome is associated with the risk of developing cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes, so eat up. Now, you know that line, breakfast is the most important meal of the day, was apparently invented in the 19th century by John Harvey Kellogg to sell his newly invented breakfast cereal, Kellogg's Corn Flakes. And after that, the pig flesh industry jumped onto the bandwagon to convince people about the importance of eating protein in the morning. Even today, most of the studies which find it's important to eat a good breakfast based on the idea of jump-starting your metabolism tend to be funded by large breakfast food companies, and most of the studies that find breakfast is unimportant or even harmful are typically not funded by those companies. So make of that what you will. But generally speaking, old, highly manipulative 20th century ideas like that of a high, healthy breakfast were largely a marketing ploy. Today, here's what people generally think is not good for you. Processed carbohydrates, like those found in pancakes, commercial bread, toast, and cereals. Refined sugars, such as we find in commercial cereal, orange juice, syrup. Milk's not great for us. Gluten's not so good. The eggs and bacon might be okay, as long as they were raised without weird chemicals, strange cruelties, and weren't fried up for you in carcinogenic fats. So basically, when something claims to be part of a complete breakfast, they're boasting that they're on the team that's going to kill you and your family. Kill you slowly by making you weaker and fatter and slow-witted and prone to inflammatory agitation and finally a traumatic seizure of a primary organ. Break the fast? You're letting yourself off pretty light if you claim you were fasting overnight while you were sleeping. Technically true, but claiming a dietary virtue by virtue of the fact that you didn't actively keep eating while you were unconscious is dubious at best. Today, common intermittent fasting, one of the most popular health and well-being practices in the world, typically involves daily 16-hour fasts. And in most cases, that means skipping breakfast and not eating until later in the day when your digestive processes actually begin to operate, open, empty, and activate, rather than shoving carbs into yourself as soon as you get up with the idea of warding off hunger and physical sensations in advance. Better keep a lot of ballast rocks in that hot air balloon basket, otherwise you might float away, I guess. But I digress. We were talking about UFOs. One of my favorite bits of UFO weirdness comes from some terrestrial D-bag who used his cable TV station equipment to record the video transmissions that space shuttles were sending, back when there were space shuttles, down to NASA headquarters. A nice bit of fun citizen engagement until his honed eye for digital pixels started to notice two or three distinct types of things that seemed to swarm near the space shuttles in low Earth orbit just at the edge of the atmosphere. Little flecky things and longer stringy things. And if you compare them to the known lengths of objects in the shot, they're moving around at extraordinary speed and look like insects or fish made of light. Periodically, astronauts ask about these things into the communication device, these luminous high-speed things seemingly moving around in a quasi-intelligent manner in the upper atmosphere, and the NASA administrators on the other end typically ignore or dismiss their questions. It's neat stuff, and it's on tape. I've seen a few things myself, very oddly behaving lights, long-standing nearby stationary wobbles that slowly blur and then start to look like planes, one very large, slow-moving, almost cartoonish spaceship, something like a cluster of Christmas lights descending from the night sky, and small humanoid creatures in remote locations. All of them, without exception, very weird. Very weird. Not at all like seeing a normal object. Not entirely objective, but not entirely subjective. These things seem to me to move at the wrong angles. They slip in and out. They have a kind of perfume of peculiarity about them. They move at speeds not just fast, but implausible, communicate in half gibberish, seem to make no distinction between inside and outside, between the genetic and the cosmic. They're like an itch you can't scratch because of where it is in the dead center of your own back, if your own back was dead center in your own mind. But I tell you, even the things I've seen that looked the most convincingly like solid technology and actual real beings gave me that same feeling I got from the purely ethereal and luminous celestial oddities, which in turn feel the same way to me as strange, normal atmospheric events make me feel. For me, looking up into the heart of the incalculable sky cathedral of an electrical storm seems subjectively interchangeable with the feeling of witnessing apparent elves and aliens. The first time that happened, I remembered Terrence and Dennis McKenna's account of seeing a UFO form out of a cloud, then changing from apparently cloud to apparently spaceship, which was seen by multiple parties, and then realizing that this famous spaceship was one that had been captured in a photo years earlier, and then discovering some time later that that original photo had been confessed as a hoax. So multiple people see something that is A, indifferent to whether it's a cloud or a spaceship, B, takes a shape based on something that has been seen before in the culture, and possibly C, has a sense of humor. I mean, did it deliberately take the shape of a hoaxed UFO? Are these things as mischievous as leprechauns? Are their shapes less about higher technology and more about some kind of atmospheric improv origami that is maybe not trying to study us or reveal itself to us, but possibly to mock us? Again, to me, that seems oddly realistic. Who knows? There might be a lot of stuff we don't know about what we quaintly call the air. And when somebody says, don't worry, it's just the wind, well, maybe you ought to worry a little.
To extend your violence, this earth of yours will be reduced to a burned out cinder. Choice is simple. Join us and live in peace, or pursue your present course and face obliteration. We shall be waiting for your answer. The decision rests with you.
Klaatu Barada Nikto, remixing dialogue from the sci-fi classic The Day the Earth Stood Still. Now, we were just talking about the odd things that seem to come into our minds out of the clear blue sky. It's the same clear blue sky that looks down upon us now as it did upon our distant ancestors with a faint hint of watching us. Out of the Blue was also the name of a fascinating and fairly credible documentary, largely about the French military's investigation into UFOs. That investigation concluded that these things were A, real in the sense that something was really happening, B, that it was definitely a threat to national security by their current definitions because it bypassed important defense structures and seemed to swarm around nuclear energy projects, and C, that if other governments, like the U.S., hint hint, had more information, wouldn't they please share it with us? But that's all recent history. 20th century history. What about way back? Ancient Aliens is an American TV series that premiered on April 20th, 2010 on the History Channel and presents hypotheses of ancient astronauts proposing historical texts, archaeology, and evidentiary legends contain evidence of past human extraterrestrial contact. And long before the show Ancient Aliens, there were beaten-up old paperback copies of 1970s versions of the books of Eric Von Daniken available in thrift stores when I was a kid. Chariots of the Gods. How did they build those pyramids? Aliens did it. How do we mutate from animals into civilization? Aliens did it. Why do ancient empires in the far corners of the globe have so much in common? Aliens did it. What are all the weird stories in the ancient mythic holy books about? They're about what them aliens done did. I know, it sounds stupid and secretly misanthropic, a vote of no confidence in the ability of our human ancestors to be able to figure out anything or build anything. But you know, I have some respect for what I consider to be the genre of supplemental subtle realm history. It's darn hard, it might even be darred, to chart the ancient past of the physical and cultural world in which we exist. So much is missing, so much time has passed, so many intricacies aren't carved in stone or left lying around in carbon datable heaps. And on top of that difficulty, there's the extra and completely understandable problem that our histories often put more trust in conventional narratives than is factually justified. People whose reputation, peer groups, and salary depend on sounding reasonable are often unnecessarily antithetical to alternative narratives and anomalous evidence. They have a hard time distinguishing new ideas from utter flights of fantasy, and so it sometimes falls to the utter fantasists to fill in that gap. Essentially, they're making up for the failure of actual historians. And I get it. Historians should make it hard for new ideas to join the conventional narrative. It's a verification process as much as it is a brainwashed exclusion process. But they still often have huge holes in their stories that don't nicely account for emergent evidence, ancestral lore, or even pretty well-verified alternative timelines. People like Graham Hancock are unlikely to be right about everything, but the intensity of the denigration and denouncing of him over the years seems ideological in nature, as if anyone with an exciting alternative idea is the avataric embodiment of pure pre-scientific nonsense. These kinds of irrational attacks on putative irrationality often inhibit the emergence of a new and richer rationality, and that makes me sad. So, wherever there are gaps, contradictions, ambiguities, or wobbles in the solid story, we may need ephemeral stories to take up the slack and mark where new research needs to be done. I often say that conservatives are instinctively good at knowing the issues, but intellectually unprepared to resolve them in a sensible, nuanced, and compassionate manner, while progressives have the competence but lack a feel for what really matters, so they devolve into cynicism, regulation, and hysteria. The solution there being to have liberal solutions to problems identified by conservatives, because conservatives are a bit like the family dog barking at friend and foe alike. I mean that they are good at identifying encroaching entities, but not that good at evaluating what should be done about those entities. And that's true of fantasy historians as well. I think they're very good at intuitively zeroing in on places and artifacts that might require reinterpretation. It's just that in general, in my opinion, they're very bad at providing those interpretations. So anytime an idea about ancient aliens comes up, I pay attention. I think I'm going to get an irrational version of an important site or piece of data that probably should be processed more or differently than is being done by the mainstream historical narrative. That said, I have no particular interest in ancient aliens. I don't even think they're slightly necessary to explain the wonders of the ancient world or the legends of ancient poetry. I'm much more inclined to the idea that something like primitive esoteric lineages of humans who specialized in the development of consciousness, understanding, and human potential were able to see and do things that might even exceed the capacity of the normal, not very impressive, but highly informed modern human beings of today. Did these ancient sects of primitive saints who gave birth to everything we call yoga, shamanism, religion, science, and culture have congruence with and ideas about entity-like phenomenon occurring in the atmosphere? Yes. We derive our ideas of pre, prana, chi, spirits, celestial wonders, sky entities from these original people. I assume that working with vortices or beings of a subtle nature was a huge part of their practice, or perhaps their interpretation of their practice. I just don't think there's any need at all to imagine that physical extraterrestrials with super advanced technology are necessary to explain any of that. And that, of course, doesn't mean there weren't ancient aliens. Just because something is improbable, unnecessary, and supported largely by nitwits doesn't mean it's not also true.
Have you recently had a close encounter?
Une rencontre plutôt inhabituelle.
Close encounter with something very unusual. Have you recently had a close encounter? Close encounter. Close encounter with something very unusual. Have you recently had a close encounter? Close encounter. Close. Have you recently had a close encounter?
Une rencontre plutôt inhabituelle.
Have you recently had a close encounter?
Une rencontre plutôt inhabituelle.
Have you recently had a close encounter?
Une rencontre plutôt
close encounter with something very unusual.
Six quavers, then call.
Who are you people? Who are you people? Who are you people?
Five Tones Bloom Phase Remix of the songs and sounds of the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Let's talk about the freakout hypothesis. Imagine you're a high-ranking U.S. military general or admiral or head of intelligence and weapons divisions in a private military industrial corporation, and it's 1940 or 1950. You get an emergency report that something weird crashed near a base in the desert not far from where top-secret nuclear research and advanced aircraft are being built. Probably the Russians. You get out there and find a little wreckage and an entity. They have an entity at the base, they say. Only there's no agreement about what it is. Everyone who's seen it or spoken with it has a completely different story, some of them deranged afterwards, having missing memory and entering into beatific or terrified emotional states. You go to see it for yourself. If it is really an alien, your government needs to either fight it or form a diplomatic alliance. If the tech is too far ahead, then you need to sue for peace and try to let it have you some of that tech so you can maintain your edge of global dominance. But you get confused too when you talk to it. It doesn't seem to understand the simplest thing. It has no concept of alliance or warfare or spaceship. It doesn't know what an alien means. It isn't sure what a planet is. Sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. You're not even sure if it's speaking or thinking or causing you to hallucinate. No conclusion you draw seems correct, and every possibility slides off it like it's coated with Teflon. No category is applicable. We're just talking about concentrated weirdness. You know it's powerful, uncontrollable, and so you try to lock it down. It's a walking source of trauma and perplexity, the exact opposite of what you have spent your whole life trying to do, to understand and control the world using technology, strategy, violence, and psychology. But this thing communicates like a surrealistic poet. No wonder the system would freak out and try to shut this down. President Nixon called Dr. Timothy Leary the most dangerous man in the world, and President Reagan called rogue spiritual teacher Osho Rajneesh the most dangerous man in the world. They thought those people who were speaking out against cultural indoctrination in general were far more dangerous than mass murderers and terrorists. So it's not surprising to me that the military-industrial complex would reflexively contract upon a truly weird phenomenon that utterly neglects our normal categories of thought and control. Maybe they were just freaked out and worried that freaking out would become an epidemic. That's the freakout hypothesis. Let's talk about the prana swarm hypothesis. What? You've never heard of the prana swarm hypothesis? Well, that's because you probably never brought me a drink at a party. If you had, I'd have told you my pet theory about skylights. I like it because it combines a lot of things I'm interested in into a single idea that might even be testable. Who knows if it's true? I keep it like a pet and feed it once in a while. Here's the basic idea. Some form of unusual electricity exists in the atmosphere surrounding the biosphere. It has an affinity for oxygen molecules. Like other forms of electricity in the sky, it consists of zillions of small charges that periodically build up into unique luminous discharges. Anyone who's ever seen ball lightning or St. Elmo's fire knows how spooky and visually spectacular electricity in the sky can be. And if regular electricity does that, why wouldn't subtle electricity do that? And if this prana or subtle lifelike energy periodically swarmed or surged, might we not see some kind of luminous phenomenon, that's the one. Lights in the sky, mysterious craft or beings. If we can see them, then photons are being discharged at us somehow. And if they're quasi-intelligent, complex, vital, and strange, well, that's what we would expect a temporary super-concentration of pranic motes or airborne chi particles to be like, wouldn't it? Psychoactive, quasi-sentient, luminous, temporary energy events typically in the atmosphere around the planet Earth, the planet with the most living things on it? Preposterous. Anyway, I've been Layman Pascal, and you've been listening to The Fact That Breakfast Is a Lie and UFOs, totally real but not exactly. This is the Cinematic Asylum on CILU 102.7 FM, and if there's anything left of the delicate circuitry that connects your brain and ears, please join us again next week for another conceptual bloodbath. Here's Nick Cage in the Bad Seats.
Take a little walk to the edge of town and go across the track where the viaduct looms like a bird of doom as it ships and cracks. Where secrets lie in the border fires and the humming wires. Yeah, man, you know you're never coming back. Across the square, across the bridge, past the mills, past the stacks. On a gathering storm comes a tall, handsome man in a dusty black coat with a red right hand. Wrap you in his arms, tell you that you've been a good boy. He'll rekindle all the dreams that took you in. Lifetime to destroy. He'll reach deep into the hole, heal your shrinking soul, but there won't be a single thing that you can do. He's a god, he's a man, he's a ghost, he's a guru. They're whispering his name through this disappearing land, but hidden in his coat is a red right hand. Respect, you feel like an insect. Well, don't you worry, buddy, cause here he comes through the ghettos and the barrio and the barry and the slum. His shadow is cast wherever he stands. Stacks of green paper in his red right hand.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
CIOU is sponsored in part by the students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
Signal Resources Limited, Thunder Bay's locally owned and operated audio-visual professionals. Contact them about your next multimedia event or installation at 807-475-9341 or at signalresources.com. The Thunder Bay Community Auditorium. Find them at tbca.com to purchase tickets and find out all of the details on their upcoming events. Vox Popular Media Arts Festival, located inside Trinity Hall at 310 Park Avenue. Join the fun every September for the annual Media Arts Fest, entering its 16th year in 2020.